Hey, this is Doug Field, CEO of Institute for Healthcare Consumerism, and welcome to this week's show. Joining me in the studio is our managing editor and co-host, Jonathan Field. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning. How are you?
And we also have a guest host with us today, a friend of the Institute and one of the leading employee benefit consultants in this market, who's with Brown & Brown, Amy Otto. Amy, good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, Amy's going to spend the whole hour with us, and we'll talk a little bit in the second segment about specifically what she's doing in Brown & Brown. But on this first segment, we thought we'd all talk about Forum last week, kind of what are the highlights, recap a little bit, what the market was communicating to us last week. All of our listeners out there listening, if you were with us, thank you for participating with us last week. You helped make last week's forum, one of our best ever, and we owe this really to the marketplace. But Amy, you were there participating with us.
I was. I think this was my fifth year.
It was your fifth year.
It's my fifth year in a row. It's been 5 years, right?
You've been to all of them. Yep.
I have. Yeah. And I remember thinking you were out of your mind 5 years ago. But how are you going to fill a forum with HSAs? I mean, I couldn't believe it, but wow.
And, to give you a little history with Amy, hosted a radio program, and when we launched the Institute, you had me on about 5-6 years ago.
That's actually. Right. That's when we met. Wow.
When this whole thing was a gleam in our eyes. Jonathan, what were your thoughts about last week?
Well, it was a great show. Really enjoyed the keynote. Dr. Kenneth Thorpe and Dr. John Goodman really taking the economist's point of view at the future of healthcare in this country. There were a lot of consensus themes that came out of the show, I think, about the importance of preventive care, especially, and how we can incorporate that more into our health system.
Well, one thing our fellow co-host who's sitting down on the beach in Florida, Ron Bachman, chairman of the advisory board, talks about all the time is that, a lot of the hype is around health insurance reform, private exchanges, adoption of HSAs, some of the other tools, but we talk about continuously health care reform, which certainly includes health insurance reform, and that's really health care consumerism in its totality. And to your point, John, I think that theme came through loud and clear. I mean, the doctor session on Thursday morning, I think a lot of the employers and, producers like yourself, Amy, sitting there hearing doctors, was very engaging discussion.
That was great. I think that might have been my favorite session overall. And it was very eye-opening. Some of the statistics they gave, and more importantly, if somebody is just out of residency and does a procedure, they get paid the exact same amount as a physician that's been practicing for 30 years because of the diagnosis codes and the way things are reimbursed. I mean, what other profession do we know of that's like that?
Yeah, and then, the concern that these doctors have around accessibility and quality of care. Mm-hmm. And, the concern they have as to where the ACA is going to cause them some increasing challenges. And yet, here are these doctors getting really excited, talking to employers and others about establishing direct contract relationship, with leading employers, establishing concierge medicine practices where they can actually, stay on their own, which a lot of docs, want to stay on their own. Mm-hmm. They don't want to come into this corporate environment. But to your point, they're actually being forced to come into this in the corporate environment because of all the issues they have to do in administering, around the ACA. I mean, one of the kind of, smoking guns out there is tort reform. It's not talked about enough. I mean, we really have to deal with tort reform at some point in time. What else did you guys see? Amy, from your view as a leading producer, I mean, your world's turning upside down, but you've been shaking it for 5 years anyway. So.
Right. I have seen a lot of change, but there were some common themes throughout the entire 3 days, and really transparency rang out loud and clear. And honestly, just words that if you mentioned 5 years ago, nobody would have really thought of or really understood. A lot about wellness and more of a strategic approach to the way we view healthcare and accountability. I mean, I loved the example they gave of if, you know, in the 80s you gave someone a card and it was just a copay and you go buy your groceries and there's just a copay no matter how many groceries right. you need, you pay the same amount. Think about where we would be with the price of food. And that's where we've gotten with healthcare.
Yep. And employers really are getting it now. I mean, the employers are really the innovators and the drivers to lead kind of the education of their employee and consumer population. And, you know, transparency, health management. I mean, think about health management for a minute. I mean, it's it hasn't worked as well as it should out in corporate America from a profitability, return on investment standpoint. But these employers are smart enough to know they have to try to figure it out. They have to try to figure out the health management piece if they're truly committed to create better consumers of health and healthcare that we talk about.
Right. And culture is so much a part of that. And there was a lot of talk about culture at the event. You know, mm-hmm. how do you build that culture? And it starts from the top. And you really do need C-suite buy-in to create that culture of wellness to really drive the claims down. And sometimes that ROI everybody's talking about, it's impossible to gauge. I mean, how do you gauge someone's productivity or their absenteeism, you yeah. know, when they're really there but they're not working? So some of those statistics are hard to gauge, but if you can really get an overall culture of wellness, I mean, gosh, it seems like a win-win, right?
Yeah, it does. It really does. And dealing with the chronic conditions, too. I mean, that's where your bubble will really burst if you're not, you know, looking at helping those employees and their families with chronic conditions better manage those conditions. You know, you're not going to prevent them. But how you help them better manage them and live a better life, right. you know, for themselves, which I think a lot of employers do care about, mm-hmm. and be more productive within the organization. But also, you know, let's be bottom line oriented a little bit, you know, help manage that healthcare cost bubble. You know?
Right. When you think about it, 133 million Americans are suffering from chronic disease and living with it. You know, we need to start with the disease management, but even more importantly, trying to catch people before they get yep. to that stage. You know, the well-being and the wellness, it's about the whole population. You know, somebody that's mid-20s might be low risk because they're young. It hasn't caught up with them yet. And if they don't have the right behaviors and the right lifestyle choices that they're making, they'll be yep. one of those 133 million Americans soon.
Yep. And private exchanges and defined contribution. I mean, you know, we, you know, PAC general session on that discussion, you know, I had led a share session on Friday morning that was filled and, you know, the presentations in the hall by private exchanges, the exchanges that were with us, all representing various different models. I mean, it is a major, major disruptive force in this marketplace, you know.
It is. I have some beliefs on the private exchanges and the defined benefit contribution strategies. I mean, I talk about it all day long.
Yep.
And to me, it makes sense. I mean, giving the employee the opportunity to select their benefits. I had an enrollment this week, and some of the comments that the employees were giving me, some of the feedback was, wow, this is great. You know, they're buying the benefits that they need mm-hmm. rather than having this, you know, low-deductible copay plan that their employer is paying so much money for it that they're not even using. So it's been enlightening, and I think that you're going to hear more and more about it. We call ours a marketplace rather than an exchange because for some reason that has a negative connotation for many. So,
you know, and it's, again, I think that is the market going to move as fast as some people think, and will we have 40 million in exchanges by 2018? It could move faster. We could have them there by 2017. I think what we talk about all the time, and it's actually why we created privatehealthcareexchanges.com, is to really help people try to figure out what the options are. You know, what are the various models? Who can help me provide what? What are the exchanges that are more broker centric that embrace you, the producer, and really provide you with a very good tool? And I think as we get feedback, you know, coming from the market, you know, real case studies, real success stories, You know, I think the market's going to be surprised at the type of companies that end up in exchanges. Mm-hmm. You know, right now everyone says, hey, yeah, the big jumbos with part-time workers, that's an easy play. I'm a restaurant, I'm a retailer, mm-hmm. easy play. And maybe downstream the smaller companies to say, hey, you know, this is an easier thing for us to do. But, you know, I think in the next couple of weeks, in fact, you're going to hear some interesting announcements of different employee populations going to exchange. I think that's going to open a lot of people's eyes. You know. I think, you know, the thing when we sit down, you talked about HSAs and, you know, John Young and Todd Berkeley, John Young with Consumer Driven LLC, Todd Berkeley with HSA Consulting. You know, led the discussion in a lunch and learn, and you know the projection there is that we're going to take this 8% penetration rate, and what it's between 10 to 12 million, depending on who you look at, HSAs in play right now, and by 2018 we could have over 50 million HSAs, and it just makes sense because they fit well into an exchange. But also outside an exchange, that's where we see employers, you know, really accelerating full replacement programs.
Right. And it is, I think it's an education process. It's, you think about it, if you're used to driving an automatic vehicle and then you get thrown into a stick shift, it takes some educating, you know, and I think that's kind of where we are right now with healthcare. It's a lot of it is about education.
Education and engagement.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I guess you can't educate them if you don't have them engaged.
That's right.
Yeah. What else, Jonathan? What else did you see, you know, at the event?
Well, let's talk a little bit about the employer panel at the end.
Yeah, very important.
Kind of. We had Jamie Benton at Racetrack Petroleum and Mohawk Industries in a few other companies up there discussing the strategies that they're actually implementing right now. So what were your thoughts on that?
And one of them is a big exchange, Walgreens.
Yeah,
Center for Walgreens.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I thought, you know, there was three really innovators, and, you know, it comes back to what I was saying earlier, is that every employer has tremendous challenges on their plate. But the key is, you know, yes, the CEO buy into change, but also those change agents, those head of benefits, head of HR that really are change agents. Because we know that hasn't always been the case, and it isn't the case right now in some cases. But the companies like a Racetrack, like a Mohawk, like a Walgreens are really trying to change it up and execute those complete programs. You know, if I'm putting an exchange in, I'm not ignoring health management and health incentives. I mean, that was Jennifer's person, right. Not ignoring that. You know, here's Jamie Benton. Jamie's a guy that a year and a half ago, when I asked him about private exchange, he said, not for me.
Right.
Now he's head down trying to figure out, you know, which is the right one for he and his organization. And very committed to, wellness and health management. And I think another thing that I don't want to, not talk about, and that's the evolution and integration of telemedicine, on-site, near-site clinics, and wellness and health management.
Sure.
I mean, you know, there's been some interesting, you know, developments that we've talked about on the radio, companies buying companies merging together, but it just makes sense, that telemedicine component for accessibility and prevention.
Mm. Absolutely.
You know, really dynamite presentation by Paula at
the League of Leaders dinner.
Yeah,
except
for the one part, right?
I know. That was interesting. Showing graphic photos while we were eating.
Yeah. Mm. But just how dynamic that was. I mean, really, where telemedicine is moving, and where we're going to, you know, what it's going to provide the doctors to provide care. I mean, doctors are excited about that too.
Right.
The opportunity with telemedicine. Health plans like a Kaiser's integrating into its models, hospitals integrating its model. And then how you tie that all together from a corporate level with, you know, on-site or near-site clinics. And that ties into the wellness part. Well, let's continue this discussion. We're going to take a brief break and stay tuned for the next segment, Healthcare Consumerism Radio.
Certification. Do you know why becoming a certified healthcare consumerism specialist is more important than ever in 2014? Adding this specialized designation to your credentials tells employers or your clients that you understand how much our industry has changed and how to navigate that change successfully. IHC University's certification program offers coursework both online and live at their biannual forum conference series, and testing is completed online. Reaffirm your position as a leader in the health and benefit management industry. Download our certification overview and learn more at www.theihcc.com. That's www.theihcc.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Hi, this is Brent Macy, Managing Director for the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism. If you're a solution provider in this marketplace, I'd like to talk to you more about our corporate membership program that will allow you to showcase your solutions in front of our audience who will be making decisions on what they're going to be putting in place surrounding their healthcare benefit packages in 2013 and beyond. Contact me at 770-296-7276 to learn more.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Hey, this is Doug Field, along with Jonathan and Amy Otto, and welcome back to the segment of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. As I said earlier in our introduction, Amy is a lead employee benefit consultant with Brown & Brown Insurance of Georgia, which is one of the largest global insurance brokerage firms in the world.
Right.
And I think
a
lot of people don't know that.
I know. It's the sixth largest in the world and sixth largest in the country. And Brown & Brown has a little bit different approach to benefits and risk. The office I'm in here in Georgia has a very large PNC book of business, and I've been hired recently to kind of grow that book of business on the health and life side, and the tools are amazing. I mean, coming from a different broker to this model at Brown & Brown. I mean, we've got over 7,000 employees and over 180 offices throughout the country, and everybody's very collaborative in their thinking, unlike, you know, sometimes where you have producers that they consider each other competitors. This is very collaborative, and all the tools I could possibly imagine, from, you know, our private marketplace, our private exchange, to on-site clinic models.
Now, who's your
wellness
exchange partner? Who's Brown & Brown's exchange?
Liaison.
Liaison is,
okay. You know, it's just a great environment to work in, and very innovative, and very much about driving change. And when we work with clients, we do it a little bit differently. We definitely talk long-term strategy, but right now, I've been spending so much time just trying to put people's mind at ease about the Affordable Care Act and what it means for them, and, you know, just trying to get them to lay a good foundation for what is to come. And I tell you what, I feel like more like a teacher than I do a benefits broker lately.
But that's true.
Because it's all about education. Educating
the client. What's a typical
size
client? Is there a typical size
client? Yeah, it's all over the board in our office, but my focus is really the 100 to, I'd say, 1,000 employees. And I see that as my sweet spot because I can really make a difference there. A lot of them are still fully insured, and they're getting hammered with rate increases. So taking them to a partially self-funded or self-funded model is my strategy. And the only way to do that is to build a good foundation of health and wellness and really help with the culture.
And they've got enough critical mass. I mean, if you've got 100 to 1,000 employees, you're spending a fair amount of money on health care. So, you're not surrounded with all the resources that a company with 5,000 employees have. So they really need you.
I mean, and it's just a great feeling when you can enlighten them on different strategies and different ways of lowering their spend. I know in one of the breakout sessions, there was an employer that was talking about benefits brokers, and he said, you know, asking a benefits broker to reduce your spend is sort of like asking a bartender to help you stop drinking. Mm-hmm. And I think I might have been the only one in the room that laughed out loud, but it is kind of funny,
it's
you know.
Yeah.
And there are brokers that really don't want to go there because it does decrease what goes into their pocket. But it's the right way. In my mind, it's the only way to help employees and employers move to a more consumer-driven plan and strategy. And really get the employees to understand their benefits. I mean, when I said I feel more like an educator, I truly do because, right. you know, the statistics, they say women spend like 30 hours or more a year shopping for shoes, and men will spend 2 or 3 days shopping for a TV and researching it.
And then how much time do we spend on healthcare?
Less than 19 minutes. Less than 19 minutes a year understanding our healthcare. So education is a huge part of what we do.
And, you know, with the private exchange and the marketplace or exchange, whatever we want to call it, is that, you know, whether a company's moving that way or not, it is forcing, you know, people to think differently about their benefits.
Absolutely.
And look at them differently.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, surveys say that 85% of employees feel that benefits are really important, but yet less than 15% understand them.
Yeah, but, you know, that's not surprising. You know, when I hear that number, it's not surprising because they never had to.
Exactly.
Everything's cost $4. I'm going to the drugstore, it's costing me $4. I'm going to the doctor's office, it costs me $20. Oh, I'm going to run the emergency room because my doc's office closed. It's only costing me $50. Well,
right.
Not.
Exactly.
Not. And
exactly.
They haven't. And if we think about where we are in this marketplace, you know, employers, you know, have taken a while to get to where they are. Now they're the innovators. It took a while for brokers, and some still aren't going there, brokers to get to where they are. I think the, you know, the smart brokers like yourself, Amy, and others get it, understand it. Look at the big picture. How do we help our clients? Because I can look at a decreased commission, or I could look at zero commission from losing a client.
You got it.
You know, losing
exactly.
a client. So if we take a look at that food chain, you know, now the eyeballs, the employers, the brokers, the consultants are all turning and say, okay, how do we educate this consumer? So it's not really surprising to me on where they are. Because we're now finally there on educating them. If I'm putting a full replacement program in, I've got to educate them and keep them engaged because they now have personal responsibility for their care and for their health. If I'm putting an exchange in, they have even more responsibility to make the right choices, you know, on their health care and the health tools that they learn. And I think we're finding early on that they want to.
They do. I think they feel empowered. And feel like finally they're getting some control and choice. Definitely finding that when we're taking clients to the marketplace. In you know, that first year, there's still education involved. You can't just throw the tools out there and expect them to understand.
Yeah, that's right.
But they really do feel very satisfied with their benefits when they can select and have more say.
Talk about transparency a little bit because, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big issue, and we know we can't have healthcare consumerism, true healthcare consumerism, without the transparency piece. We know there's some regulations that need to change in Washington that can allow more true transparency mm-hmm. to take place. But what do you see not only in your personal professional experience, Amy, and your time in the space, but what is the team at Brown & Brown? What do you guys see when it comes to that transparency piece?
It's key. I mean, the transparency is key to leading people to the HSAs or the high deductible plans because, you know, a procedure can cost $250 in one place and two blocks away can be $2,500.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of tools out there available now that we use with our clients and more are popping up every day. But the catalyst for payment reform, the recent study showed that like 45 states out of 50 got an F on the report card. Like they completely flunked in the transparency. And I think it was Maine and Massachusetts were at the top of those that offer the transparency. But I think that as these tools are available and for both sides, the provider and the consumer, it's going to really open people's eyes. And you know, if they have a $5,000 deductible and that's their money coming out of their pocket up to $5,000, trust me, they're going to care a little bit more than they did before.
And you know what's what I think is would surprise a lot of people when it comes to true transparency is, you know, it is about accessibility, quality care, and price. It's really all three of those. And take an MRI. We probably use this example too much. I mean, think about it. One MRI is the same as the next MRI, in a lot of cases from quality. And you can go to one place down the street and it costs you, $1,000? You can go around the corner and it costs you $300.
Right.
And the $300 may actually have a higher quality rating.
right.
hired, you know, feedback people. So I think the more the consumers take control, we're going to see transparency, true transparency speed up because they're going to demand it. And the plan providers aren't going to be able to hold, you know, hold back data. And, you know, they're going to, everyone's going to have to provide it.
Absolutely. And when you mentioned to individuals that have bought a car before, you look at the Kelley Blue Book, right?
Yeah,
where you're,
yeah.
you're selling a car. And then the healthcare blue book that exists.
I was going to say, you're about to make Jeff really happy.
Really? It's the healthcare blue book. It's like people don't know it exists. Well, how would they, you know, unless you're in our industry?
Right.
So when you can enlighten someone on some of these tools that are available, fairhealth.com, another one, and these are free tools available to them, and they just feel so empowered. And I think that transparency, you're going to hear more and more about it. There are more and more companies coming out with tools to track it and utilize services. So it's not going away.
Yeah, I think when there's a consistency among all the transparency players that they want to build a groundswell of energy through employers to get employers to turn to Washington and say, we need to make these
right.
changes on a federal and state level. I think that's what the Catalyst of Payment Reform talks a lot about, too.
Right.
So, interesting piece. Supplemental health benefits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of interesting. You know, we think we all talk about the importance of a good mix of supplemental health and even voluntary
mm-hmm.
in a plan. But at our conferences, sometimes they don't get the attention that I think it deserves. What do you think it is? You think it's just that, you know, people have got to figure out what exchanges are doing or what a full replacement program is doing, and supplemental health is kind of an afterthought?
I think it has been an afterthought, but I think it's going to be on the forefront of many people's minds okay. now. Because as you give people choices, like, again, I keep going back to our marketplace. When you look at individuals' buying habits, mm-hmm. if they pick a high deductible plan, they may want the other coverages to fill in the gaps. So if you can show them how to put the pieces of the puzzle together to create their plan, supplemental insurance is a huge part of that.
Yeah,
I definitely see it as a growing industry for sure.
Amy, we've got about a minute to go on this segment, mm-hmm. and as it relates to you and Brown & Brown, leave our audience with a couple takeaways that you'd like to share with them.
You know, I think as you're looking at healthcare reform and getting nervous about it, just try to alleviate some of the confusion and really build, like I said, a good foundation. It's all about strategy, definitely, and mitigating your risk and kind of analyzing where that risk is and sharing the responsibility. Implementing wellness plans. You get a safe driver discount, right, if you haven't had any accidents. So you should actually get a break or a credit or an incentive for being healthy and working towards that with healthy lifestyle choices.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I really think collecting the data, creating a good culture, and education. I mean, if I were to leave the listeners with one word, it's education.
Education.
Mm-hmm. It really is. So It's all about strategy, and I'm excited about where things are going. I really am.
Yeah, we are too. You know, and it's been a long pull for a lot of us in this space, but we are as well. And I think if we can kind of keep the ACA at bay and get some of the regulations changed, I mean, I don't think the law's gone anywhere. That's my personal and professional belief. I think we need to focus on fixing the parts that we can fix.
That's right.
And helping employers and their consumers deal with it right now and get through it and do it cost effectively and in a quality way. Well, thank you, Amy. And Amy's going to stay with us and be our guest co-host with our next upcoming guest. So stay tuned for the next segment, Healthcare Consumerism Radio.
Solution providers, are you aware of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism's multiple marketing platforms? You're invited to get a little closer to IHC with our Solution Provider Membership Marketing Program. Through IHC's exclusive Solution Provider Membership, your business gets an all-access pass to engaging your prospects. This membership embeds your business within the Institute, which immediately aligns your company, its solutions, and your key executives with the nationally credible IHC brand and shows your support of the healthcare consumerism movement as a market-wide solution. And that's just the beginning. Contact IHC's Managing Director, Brent Macy, today at bmacy@theihcc.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Membership. Are you an IHC member? Access to the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism's breaking news, industry trends, expert blogs, and networking with IHC's industry-wide member community. IHC membership puts you at the focal point of the dynamic health and benefit industry, allowing you to join the conversation and collaborate with industry stakeholders and your peers. Your IHC membership includes a subscription to Healthcare Consumerism Solutions Magazine, Healthcare Exchange Solutions Magazine, annual publications Healthcare Solutions Superstars, and Healthcare Solutions Outlook, a free white paper, and much more. Sign up as a free IHC member or $99 premium IHC member today at www.theihcc.com. That's www.theihcc.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Hey, this is Doug Field, along with my co-host, Amy Otto, and welcome back to this segment of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. Amy, let's pick up the discussion around small businesses and the ACA and talk a little bit about, you know, wellness and prevention and incentives and the whole premium differential.
Sure. Well, when you think about where we are today, I mean, 21% of Americans still smoke, which for me, that kind of surprises me. Maybe it's because I don't hang around with a lot of smokers, but the statistics on obesity and everything are just alarming. And really, they say that 20% of the population is driving 80% of those claims.
Wow.
So it's really because of lifestyle choices and, you know, what we put in our body and how often we move our body. So, you know, with 133 million individuals living with chronic disease, like we just talked about, we need to stop, you know, the cycle before it gets to that place.
And it's going to get worse with all we baby boomers, I'm including myself, no one else, myself, we baby boomers moving, you know, into kind of the point we're going to need more care if we're not, you know, careful, taking care of ourselves.
Yes, and you bring up a great point, too. I mean, with over 69% of Americans being overweight, according to the CDC, that's one issue. But then you also think about the aging workforce and their health and wellness. I mean, people are having to work longer, so they're on those benefits longer. And, you know, that the lifestyle choices and the obesity, think about the disease states, heart disease, strokes, type 2 diabetes, depression, certain types of cancer. I mean, those are all high claims, and they're driven by lifestyle choices. So I think laying a foundation and groundwork for wellness in a company is key. And the Affordable Care Act.
And that's even for small companies, right? I mean,
absolutely. Absolutely. The Affordable Care Act now, as of 2014, allows for a 30% premium differential for those that choose not to participate in a qualified wellness program. So, like I talked about earlier, that good driver's discount, employers can pass that on. And 50% premium differential for those that still smoke if they offer a tobacco
cessation. That's not a small number at all.
That's 50% of the overall COBRA rate. That's just not the employee's portion. So you can really hammer an individual. I mean, I don't think that it's a good idea to do that off the bat. But as a strategy, you know, to kind of start offering those differentials, it's important. Definitely.
Very interesting. And I think we're going to continue this discussion around the ACA and small businesses with our current guest joining us from New York, Steve Friedman with Littler Mendelson. Hey, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Steve, I'm here with Amy Otto, who's a guest host here, and she's a leading benefit consultant with Brown & Brown down here. And Jonathan Field is here, my managing editor. And give our audience, you're a repeat guest, and glad to have you back again. But kind of refresh our audiences with, you know, Littler Mendelson and your unique position in the space and helping work with small businesses in the ACA.
Sure. Littler Mendelson is the country's largest firm, sort of a boutique law firm. We specialize just in labor, employment, and benefits. And we have many, many attorneys who are focusing, if not exclusively, a large part of their practice on ACA compliance and helping our clients navigate around this very, very interesting and complicated set of rules.
Steve, define for us kind of small businesses. People define it a little different. What do you define as a small business?
Well, generally under $20 million in sales. We actually did some polling about how small businesses were viewing the ACA, and I think that's what we used as our yardstick. And, you know, frankly, when we did our polling with small businesses, it showed that there was an awful lot of fear out there about the ACA.
What are some of the top concerns that you went through your poll that you, for small businesses, what are they most concerned about with the ACA?
I think the biggest concern, frankly, is cost. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how much health care is going to be costing them in the future compared to where it is now. You know, as we know, the cost of health care has been escalating rapidly for all businesses for some time. But the ACA creates additional problems for small businesses. For one thing, there's a fear that the costs that have been high are even going to go higher, and that the cost increases could be higher percentages than what we've seen in the past. And then secondly, there's the notion of the employer mandate, which frankly creates this idea that businesses have to cover full-time employees. It's a mandate that's never existed before, and that's going to create a lot of hurdles for small businesses, basically imposing costs that they never had.
Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the hours? I guess full-time employment is now 30 hours. If somebody has a lot of part-time employees, how do those part-time employees add up to equal full-time employees for the statistical analysis?
Sure. These rules don't apply to all businesses, and it's important to make that clear. In 2015, these rules will apply to businesses with over 100 full-time employees, or what we call full-time employee equivalents, and then that number goes down to 50 in 2016 and in later years. But so the question is, you know, how do you know whether you have this threshold 100 or 50 full-time employees? Well, what you do is you first look at those folks who are working over 30 hours, whether or not you include them as full-time on your ledger. They're going to be called full-time employees for purposes of the Affordable Care Act. So you take those employees, put them on one side of the ledger, and then you look at all of your part-timers, and you count up their monthly hours and divide those hours by 120. And that will give you a number of what we call full-time equivalents. You add the full-timers to the full-time equivalents and see if you breach the 100 or 50 employee mark. And if you do, then you're subject to this employer mandate beginning in 2015.
You know, yeah, Steve, we have a job problem in this country, and I think it's going to get worse instead of better, some of it because of the ACA. Because if I'm a small business, if I'm a startup, you know, if I'm a new business, you know, it causes me to look at my business a different way and growing it, does it not?
Absolutely. When we did our polling, we found that significant numbers of small businesses were either taking their hiring and putting hiring plans on hold, or making sure that the people that they hired weren't full-time employees but part-time employees. This isn't exactly a pro-growth approach, and it sort of flies in the face of what one would want small business to be seeking to do. And so I think there is a very big concern about whether the sort of what we call unintended consequences of the ACA may have a negative impact on the way small businesses grow and on how employers think about their costs and about their employees and how they're going to be going about doing business.
Yeah, because we've got there's a lot of criticism sometimes that comes out of Washington about the prevalence of part-time workers across the country, but you just talked about that being the ACA being a big multiplier of part-time people.
That's, you know, and keep in mind that we were talking about taking these part-timers and dividing their hours by 120 to get part-time equivalents.
Right.
However, keep in mind that that's only, you only include those part-timers to determine if your business must qualify or must satisfy the employer mandate under the ACA. But if you do have to satisfy the employer mandate, then the only people you must cover are your full-time employees, those who are working over 30 hours a week. So you don't have to cover anybody who's working under that hourly threshold.
Do you see any of this changing? You know, we had I attended a conference out in Colorado, and Gibbs spoke at that conference, and one of the key things that he said almost immediately in his presentation, that one of the things he felt was going to be a compromise that was going to happen relatively quickly is the employer mandate go away. And the whole audience was kind of stunned and said, what? What did you just say?
That got a reaction, right?
Yeah. I mean, what do you think? I don't know whether you've heard that too, Steve. I mean, what do you...
You hear about a lot of things with this law.
Yeah, you do.
You know,
it's cause that's because there's a lot of pages with this law, Steve.
Right. Well, no, there's a lot of pages, and there's a lot of speculation as to what may or may not be going away. Here's the way I basically look at this. This is the centerpiece of Obama's domestic policy agenda. And I think it's fair to say that that's the case for not only the first term, but also this term. You know, this is up front and center. Mm-hmm. And we can certainly see some tinkering that is possible and even probable. And such tinkering might be, you know, will that 30-hour-a-week threshold be pushed up a little bit to give businesses some relief so that they don't have to include everybody who's a 30-hour person as a full-timer? And so we're hoping, you know, for our clients' sake, that perhaps that moves up to 40 hours a week, which would be more realistic. But to think that there's going to be a wholesale disposition of the employer mandate, or one of the other big pieces of this legislation, I think that's not going to happen unless and until we see a big calamity occurring in connection with one of these big pieces of the legislation. So, you know, if we saw in a couple of years that employers were getting crushed by this, and that, you know, that it was actually affecting American business, at that time I think perhaps it would be appropriate to, you know, think about whether there may be something that would be happening with the employer mandate. But until that time, I just don't see it. Yeah. You know, I see a lot of tinkering going on, and we just have too much gridlock and too much of a stalemated structure in D.C. to see a lot of give on either side without it really being forced.
Yeah, I think you're right. Steve, we've got about a minute to go, and I want to give you a chance to leave our audience with one or two takeaways.
Well, what every employer should be doing is really focusing on what strategies you're adopting for next year. Some employers are going to be paying the $2,000 penalty tax and letting their employees go to the exchange. Other employers are just going to be doing what they're doing and covering everyone, you know, in accordance with the rules. But a lot of employers are also taking proactive steps to think about whether they should be restructuring their workforce, how to best deal with these rules. You know, my advice would be sit down with someone who can advise you what your options are, what position you'll be in with respect to whether or not you're going to be paying penalty taxes. You know, really do a strategic overview of how you should be approaching the ACA. Just don't let it hit you in the face in 2015.
Okay. Steve, listen, we really, really appreciate you joining us. You have a great weekend, and we'll have you on again sometime in the near term.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Steve. To our audience, stay tuned for the next segment of Healthcare Consumerism Radio.
PrivateHealthcareExchanges.com. Have you checked out the only online guide where employers, health plans, brokers, and consultants can navigate private exchange and defined contribution markets? Browse PrivateHealthcareExchanges.com today. The emergence of private health insurance exchanges represents perhaps the most significant shift in how Americans purchase health benefits in years. As employers move their employee population into private exchanges, this trend is on a growth projection into the 2015 benefit year and beyond, according to research published by Allegis Technologies. Visit privatehealthcareexchanges.com today to browse our national searchable directory and for Healthcare Exchange Solutions magazine and newsletter. Be sure to submit your listing for inclusion in this groundbreaking guide at www.privatehealthcareexchanges.com. That's www.privatehealthcareexchanges.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Healthcare Consumerism Radio. Learn, connect, share. Join us every Friday at 11 o'clock to learn all those confusing issues around healthcare, Obamacare, Medicare, Medicaid. We'll help you find the answers, help you stay in compliance. Join us Friday at 11 o'clock.
Hi, this is Brent Macy, Managing Director for the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism. If you're a solution provider in this marketplace, I'd like to talk to you more about our corporate membership program that will allow you to showcase your solutions in front of our audience who will be making decisions on what they're going to be putting in place surrounding their healthcare benefit packages in 2013 and beyond. Contact me at 770-296-7276 to learn more.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Hey, this is Doug Field, along with my hosts, Amy Otto and Jonathan Field. Welcome back to the segment, Healthcare Consumerism Radio. And we have joining us today Tom Grant, who's Senior Executive with SelectQuote Benefit Solutions. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
We're good. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you.
You have a very unique position in this space, we're excited to learn more about how you see this and how you see the private exchange market evolving. But give our audience a backgrounder on SelectQuote Benefit Solutions, please.
Sure, absolutely. SelectQuote was started back in the mid-1980s, really the first private insurance exchange founded in the United States. Back in the late 1980s, the founder of the company, a gentleman named Sharon Singh, went to the life insurance company and developed the idea of selling life insurance really telephonically, where he went to, maybe a dozen different carriers and came up with the idea of really selling level premium term insurance using a quote engine and comparing the different rates and underwriting classifications, and really did it on the principle that the individual on the end of the phone, the agent, was commission agnostic and was always trying to get the best deal for the consumer. So the agent was paid a service fee and really had no idea what the commission structure was with the company. And we've expanded since then into different verticals in the home and auto business, and in the Medicare exchange business, where really we'll sell through the exchanges now. We have about 800 employees currently, and about 200,000 policy owners will operate through the exchange.
Very interesting. How do you see the private exchange market, private healthcare exchange market, health and benefits market going forward over the next few years?
Well, obviously it wasn't a terribly smooth rollout with the state exchanges.
Yeah.
I guess I'd be a little kind, but there was a few glitches along the way with the state and the federal exchange. It's certainly a very ambitious project. I think that it's obviously going to happen. The progress has been much slower than they would like to have seen it, but I think certainly for the consumers, as they get more used and accustomed to buying their individual health insurance through the state or federal exchange or other private health insurance exchanges, it's very beneficial for our business, because the consumer gets, you know, accustomed to buying their insurance products, because a lot of times the consumers don't really differentiate one insurance product from the other. You know, gosh, I should buy my insurance. Well, I'll just do that telephonically, pick up the phone and access an exchange. So we think long-term that's a very positive development for our company.
Does it allow for several plans to be compared side by side? I mean, walk us a little bit more through how the tool works.
Yeah, so basically in the Medicare world, for example, that's a great product to compare side by side because Blue Cross could have a Plan F with a MedSup, certainly Mutual Omaha or Cigna, the other major players, or AARP, but really a Plan F is a Plan F. They're all exactly the same, with the one very important difference that there's a difference in pricing. So the actuaries will price a Plan F in a specific zip code or area code based on the morbidity of the experience there, and they might, for whatever reason, decide not to be all that competitive in 66208. But most consumers really they're really struggling to find out or understand what the difference between Medicare Supplement and Medicare Advantage, let alone that there's a huge or significant pricing difference between one Medicare Supplement and the other. So what we'll do is all of our agents are licensed in all 50 states. So when we're dealing with an individual in North Carolina, wherever it might be, we will fire up the quote engine, and then we see who has the most competitive plan. And as I mentioned, a Plan F is a Plan F on the Medicare Supplement side. Lots more to it on the Medicare Advantage plans. Those are very similar to what the network plans are like on the employer side. Lots of information to go over in terms of the pharmacy component on that. But still, when you're looking at the various plans and trying to figure out which is the right one for you, our people will take you through it in a very agnostic style. And so much of our interface with the consumer, whether it's a retiree where the plan has been terminated or they're offering a commercial plan as an option to the retiree plan that's available, is educating the consumer about what's out there, what is out there that's available for me as a retiree. And I can't emphasize how important that is to a retiree, because really for someone who's post 65, the leading cause of bankruptcy is a healthcare reason. Yeah. So rightfully so, an individual is enormously concerned about what's the right plan for me. What should I purchase? And educating them in terms of what the Medicare supplement plans are all about, educating those individuals on the Part Ds, educating them on the Medicare Advantage plans that are available, that's a big part of the interview that we have with the client. So average duration of those calls typically is about almost 50 minutes. So it's typically a long interview that we take the individual through and present the various options to them.
Now, Tom, do you work directly with the employers on these options?
Yeah, so we do. We market directly to consumers, and then we market on a B2B basis where we'll call on employers that are either trying to provide some steerage to a commercial plan where their rates are not that competitive, they're partnering with us to where we will provide seminars, meetings, and whatnot to the retirees to educate them about, well, these are the new changes that are taking place in your own existing retiree program, where there's a rate increase, there's a change in the pharmacy payout, whatnot. But these are the plans that are available on the commercial sector, and you can see a lot of times that the rates are far less. Or you'll have a plan termination where a large employer, for example, AT&T has, I think, about 350,000 individuals in their retirement plan. They're terminating the plan next year and then making an exchange available to the retirees where a subsidy is paid to the retirees. It'll vary with how many years they've been with the company. And then they'll use that subsidy or a portion of the subsidy to purchase the Medicare plan, whether it's a MedSup or a Medicare Advantage. Most of the time, if there's a significant subsidy that's involved, I'd say 70% of the individuals in a retirement plan will pick a Medicare supplement plan. But it varies in terms of the structure. And then some of the companies will terminate the plans and provide really no subsidy whatsoever. It just varies from company to company. And it's a business right now in terms of looking at the post-65 retiree the benefits that are out there. Obviously, it's the older companies that have been in business a long time, whether it's the big pharmaceutical companies, oil and gas companies, companies in the utilities business that still provide a post-65 retirement plan. A lot of those plans have been terminated. The companies have to post a large liability on the books, and they've changed the tax laws and the pharmacy benefits, so it's not as advantageous to the companies. And quite frankly, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of those plans are priced pretty high. So when they terminate the plans and provide a subsidy, a lot of the retirees don't realize it at the time, but it's a much better deal for the retirees going forward. In the public sector, the states, you can go to a website and see what the it's usually typically side by side where you see the unfunded pension liability. Well, right next to that, you'll see the unfunded health care retiree for the various states around the country. Only three states, I believe, have terminated their post-65 coverage. But I think that's will be a growing market where you'll see more and more states, municipalities really terminate those plans, provide a subsidy to retirees, and provide an educational resource like ourselves to educate the retirees on the choices that are available to them.
You seem to be...
usually, typically, they'll provide a time frame of 3 to 4 months before they terminate the plan, and the individual retirees can call in and talk to the counselors.
Hey, Tom, we've got about a minute to go on this program. Very interesting, and I appreciate your time. Leave our audience with one or two takeaways you'd like to share with them, please.
I think, the important takeaways are Medicare is very confusing, but it's incredibly important to understand the different products that are out there, to understand what a Medicare supplement plan is, what it isn't, and to understand the complexities of a Medicare Advantage plan. And I would emphasize that really nobody really in the marketplace should be out there just with the basic Medicare coverage. They all should at least, with how competitively priced these products are, have a Medicare Advantage contract.
All right, Tom, thank you so much. Enjoy your weekend out there, and I appreciate having you on the program. And Amy, thank you for being our guest host today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
It's been fun. And to our audience, we'll see you next week on Healthcare Consumerism Radio.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.